We had a meeting that was supposed to finish 20 minutes ago, but really still isn't finished yet. We're just getting here. So some of the group, that's why some of the group is straggling in. We are sponsoring this particular section or session under the Alaska Public Health Association. And the only time we could find for our business meeting was for a breakfast meeting that made us late for this. So please accept our apologies. We thought of you, but we just couldn't quite make it. We're very, very privileged to have people with a breadth of observation and experience to participate in our panel this morning. Above and beyond most of us. These people are people who have not only been intimately concerned with their professional and career interests. Bill, that's for you. Where are you, Bill?
Right.
Oh, there you are. But also they've been concerned with promoting public health rather than just maintaining public health. They've been interested in doing something better than what we've done before. Most of them have been so busy serving on committees, community interests committees, active in various organizations, that I really had to twist their arms to get them to take time out from their business and their services to the community to come over this morning to talk with us. But yet, I think the very thought of change in the North and the provoking thought, what does this mean to public health, intrigued each of them enough that they want to come and share with you, and I hope this is a sharing session. Because we are truly in public health in a most unusual situation. No one has ever been where we are. And we want to go well where we're going. We're trying to develop a health team, a health approach to living in the North that is not structured. There, in some places, there are not communities. The communities have not yet been built. There are no routine patterns for serving people. Some of these areas are beyond the economic limits of private enterprise to exist there. And yet, right under our very eyes and almost overnight, a multi-million dollar concern for economic development has set the stage for living and being in the North, whether we know how or have planned how or not. We're there. In the time in which the heartbeat of a man and his ever being can be monitored on the moon, and I may sit in my front room and sit. We're living in an age of shrunken distances, in a time in which we have learned we have to exist together, interdisciplinary, intergeographic, more than ever before. There must be some new thoughts in delivering and understanding the mechanism of promoting public health, delivering health services. So we're privileged at this time to have these gentlemen who are keen observers participate in our panel and share with us as we discuss this situation we're in. Our keynote speaker will be Dr. William Offrank, who is the Executive Secretary of the Western branch of the American Public Health Association. And he speaks with experience in the 13 separate public health jurisdictions operating under his office. He speaks from previous experience of being and working in Alaska, and being governmentally responsible for health functions in Alaska, in his role as regional medical director of the San Francisco regional office. He also speaks from the viewpoint of being extremely keen and astute observer of mankind. Bill, do you want to take your chair up here where you'll be ready to speak first? And then certainly Dr. Shabo, who has lived long in Alaska, even though he doesn't look his age at all, well, he isn't that old. He served his government in the role of a member of a board of health. He's served certainly in many roles in his local community. And he speaks from the role of a private practitioner, a person who has delivered health service immediately to more people than probably I could ever know. So Dr. Shabo, would you be the next panelist? And Mac, do you mind if I call you Mac Lanford?
I do.
Mac Lanford comes from the Public Health Service. His first experiences in Alaska date back to in territorial days, in which he was one of the persons who helped initiate the environmental research effort of the Public Health Service in Alaska. He was the word become flesh. Initially, we started talking about an Arctic health research program, and then eventually people came, and then even recently we got a lovely new building on campus here, which is the center. But it has recently become an ecological center, and Mac Lanfair is the acting director of the Arctic Health Research Laboratory. And I believe, if I'm correct, we'll be going back to Washington. You're serving in two roles. You're a Washington administrator, yes, and an Alaska administrator. Back, you take the next seat. And Dr. Friedman, I'm sure needs no introduction to you. Dr. Friedman is the director of health for the state. He comes to us from California, and he has a broad experience in public health. He, I'm sure, will have many things to say to us as we approach officially as the chief administrator for public health programs in Alaska, these problems that I mentioned earlier. A new service in a new area at a new time. Dr. Friedman? And Art, you don't mind if I just call you Art? Art Sexauer. He's a local businessman. I've met Art in more places. I won't tell you all the places I've met Art. But they're all good. They're all good places. But Art is the man who is the stem winder. He's the mainspring. He makes the community service committee's function, and he's a businessman in Alaska. He's interested in Alaska. He's interested in what we do with our dollars, our government dollars. He's interested in private enterprise still having at least a little role in what goes on here in Alaska. So Art, would you speak from the citizen's point of view on our discussion? And with this, Bill, I'll just turn it over to you, Bill Offrank, and let you go ahead.
Thank you, President Salter. Is this working? I think it is, yeah. Can you hear me? Good. Dr. Friedman, other distinguished members of the panel, Mr. President, and friends. I first think I should say, Dr. Scheibel, I hope I don't befriend or belittle our profession by skimming over the personal health aspects too much and kind of emphasizing the environmental problems in the North. With Dr. Scheibel here, I need not worry too much about the personal health. He's had a great deal more experience with individual personal health than I, and I'm sure he will take care of that aspect quite adequately. Although I think another health officer would recognize that I don't speak as fluently, Joe, about environment as an environmentalist. But I'll do my best to highlight some of the things that I see are important about the change in the North. Whatever public health change takes place for the good of public health in the North will not just happen. Health workers must be more than just not timid, more than just myopic. They must be bold and farsighted. Unless the challenges of pending Arctic health services is accepted and the leadership provided by health people, we may continue to be defrauded and the health of the people continue to be neglected, and in the North, hungry, not only hungry, but cold. I could have started my speech off with a statement I heard made in Oakland during the Western Branch Conference by Mr. Choate, who is working for the Public Affairs Institute on the hunger program, which he said, "Hunger and malnutrition in the United States did not just happen. It was created by political design and intent." I think those are rather harsh words if left right there, because I doubt very seriously, except for the fact that our congressmen and politicians are interested in re-election, and some of our private enterprises are interested in the almighty dollar, I doubt if their plans, objectives, had in mind hunger. But it resulted in hunger and malnutrition. And this is what you and I have to watch out about in the health field, among other things. When Joe twisted my arm 4 or 5 times and invited me to come up here, I couldn't resist it very well. I told Dr. Scheibel I had been here in 1946 and was naive enough to think I could help wipe out the red light district in downtown Fairbanks. And after a week here, Earl Albrecht asked me what I thought was the best way to get rid of it, and I said a bulldozer and create shopping centers. And I hate bulldozers because they destroy beautiful things, forests, natural resources. But so help me, I come back in 67 to the exposition and they had bulldozed them down and they had a shopping center, a Safeway store that sells groceries. And now they have a new penny store. To me that's a little, I don't know that money-wise how much it brings the city, but from my standpoint, I doubt if there's as much red light activity in Fairbanks, scattered as it may be, as there was concentrated in that area behind the post office. Roughly 3rd Street, wasn't it, Doctor? Do you recall?
Fourth.
Well, it was. You know, my memory gets away from me. I had to do a little reading and reflecting to get up on what the change in the North was all about. And I feel very much like the little boy who made his first book report. I had stacks of journals and magazines that high, and after I'd perused them and read them, I felt like he did when he made his book report in 2 sentences. Went like this. This book was about penguins. And I learned a lot more about penguins than I wanted to know. And I found that true about Alaska. I learned so much about it, Joe, and gentlemen to the front table, that I honestly didn't know what to say. There's so much to be said, so much to be done, that I'm only going to skim the surface and read you what I put down and hope the reference material that I leave with you will be of some help to you. Joe admonished me to talk about planning and keep it rather elementary. He need not have said that. I can assure you that I don't think there was any elementary planning went into the changes that are occurring in the oil industry in the North. That was planning par excellence, and it started back before 45, 46. The health field was along the fringes of that to some extent, but not planning enough. It may well be, too, Dr. Scheibel and Mr. Alter and Dr. Friedman and others, that the answers to some of the environmental health problems of the North are not the orthodox one that you and I think about, like sanitation, housing. I had the pleasure, before I retired from the Public Health Service, of visiting the Trust Territory Islands of the Pacific for about 4 months, making a health survey as to what ought to be done about health problems there in the tropics. The High Commissioner, who was a native of the state at one time, Mr. Godding, asked me if I could recommend one thing for the Trust Territory for the good of the health people, what would it be? I said, the purchase of a jet 727. He said, my God, that's out of your field. That's transportation. I said, yes, and if you had a jet 27 instead of those two slow-poking Grumman planes that you have, it wouldn't take you 2 weeks to get patients to the hospital, and you wouldn't need near as much medical help and as many hospitals, and the price of the plane would be worth it. Today they have two. I don't know what my saying had to do with it. Other people thought the same thing. I never had an original idea in my life, and I don't think that was one. Planning has been taking place a long time. I think the most elementary statement I can make about planning and total participation of the consumer as well as the planner is that of taking a vacation. I suppose some of us take a vacation without planning, but I doubt it. We pack our clothes, we fill the car with gas. If we've got a bunch of kids who are teenage, we plan the route. We pick out all the nice places, mentally write them in our head, and start out and hopefully take along enough money, and then start out and then somewhat stash the plan. But in general, we've had fun planning. The same is true in the health field. You've got to plan in order to think through all the wrong things you might do. From the elementary standpoint, planning, comprehensive planning in public health is exactly the same thing as planning a vacation with the same objectives. It's thinking through before the thing happens. What I've just said is more or less the prelude. The title Joe gave me was Interprofessional and Interclimatic Concerns in Providing Arctic Health Services. That threw me. Except his letter said I may talk about anything I want to. So I'm going to do that. The key word in that title, it seems to me, is concerns. The interprofessional, interclimatic considerations that must be taken into account in providing Arctic health services are so numerous that planning just has to be a first important step. The change in the North, the general theme of this conference, is obvious to most any person who has taken the time to review the current literature about the great developments in Alaska today. Both popular and scientific magazines tell the same story, each more exciting words in more exciting words than the other, and each with the inevitable tales of woe, spelled W-O-E. Economic progress in the exploration for oil, lumber, minerals, new fishing and hunting techniques is indeed necessary for the future development of Alaska as well as any other state. The developments of the Great North Slope of this state show that progress has a constant running mate, however, in the public health field: disaster. Progress and disaster for the health of the people. Not intentionally planned by political design and intent, as I mentioned ago, but it's there if we aren't careful. You can see it. I borrowed some pictures. I've been to Nome, but I hadn't seen the North Point Slope. Now, I may not get to go, but I'll try, Joe. The scattered remains of oil containers, construction debris, polluted snow, water, air from industry show lack of planning in the health protection field. The result? Poor health, cold people, malnutrition, ill health in the form of hunger, malnutrition, tuberculosis, and other chronic respiratory conditions, as well as disease conditions from the polluted water, are just as serious for the victims in the isolated homes in the Point Hope area as they are for the victims living in poor housing in Los Angeles. They're exactly the same kind of a problem if they're not provided for. There's some new pathogens that we look upon today causing health, Dr. Shiva. I think we were taught there were bacteria and viruses and maybe a few fungi. The new pathogens I refer to now are those of air pollution, water pollution, noise. Those, to me, are just as surely causes of disease as are the bacteria you and I were taught years ago. They are the new pathogens, lack of food, and so on. Paul Friggin's condensed story in the Reader's Digest called The Great Alaska Oil Rush in July issue 1969 points up many of today's happenings in Alaska. The attraction to the newly discovered black gold fields of the north in search of oil somewhat parallels and perhaps duplicates, or maybe even exceeds the excitement that caused the rush to the gold fields of the Klondike in 1896. The signs of boom are everywhere. Where once only polar bears and caribou roamed, there are new airfields, new roads, and the lights of oil derricks and isolated drilling crews twinkle throughout the Arctic night. That all of these things could happen in Alaska without having a tragic oil spill into the great water areas, as happened in Santa Barbara, California, this year, is expecting too much. Treatment of such an accident seems costly and unsatisfactory. Prevention may not be possible, but an attempt is the answer, and this takes place by interprofessional concerns and planning together. Health workers with the oil workers at all levels, and especially at the management top level leaders in both instances. Management of oil and the level of Dr. Friedman in your state and higher in the governor's office for planning. Paul Friggin's story goes on to tell about the recent oil field discoveries in Alaska, and it may well be the biggest, the most exciting oil field ever discovered in North America. There is speculation that recent discoveries of oil in Alaska may help make the United States self-sufficient with respect to available oil at reasonable prices. If this indeed is true, why not have the United States human and health resources protected at the same time at reasonable prices? We can only do that by planning. One way or another, the citizens of the United States are going to pay for ill health in terms of money. It will cost more, plus more human suffering, if we fail to properly plan for this period of great growth and development of the great new industries in this and other states. Who takes the initiative now in planning the leadership for health protection in Alaska for the future? That question all comes up in my mind, it comes up in your mind. Who starts the planning? The answer is leaders, wherever they are. One always hopes that enough able, imaginative leaders are now in the government, in the states, attending meetings like this one, supporting such organizations as the Alaska Science Conference and the Alaska Public Health Association, and other organizations, too numerous to mention, concerned with the health of people as a group and as individuals. We hope they will somehow be motivated to start and continue discussions and planning and conferences that will lead to some positive progress. These steps all take work and new effort from day to day, and one should never be discouraged too early by many false starts and failures, because they will happen. Success doesn't come easy. Another exciting book published in 1969 by the National Geographic Society, one of their special publications, is called Alaska. It is very much worthwhile studying. It arrived a few days before I came up here. In typical National Geographic Society style, it is a wonderful color picture book of Alaska, accompanied by a new map of the state and a map of the top of the world, which I hadn't seen before. A casual review of the colored photographs lends itself to a relaxing tour of Alaska with all the excitement of the far north. As one thinks of each new development, the partners of progress that I mentioned a moment ago also show up in these pictures. The bleak landscapes, colored by poor housing, insanitary surroundings, smoke, dust, and evidence of suffering from the extreme cold of the north, are all in those pictures, if you look. The camera takes the whole picture, mind you, but one must look at it several times to discover man's neglect of his own environment and the destruction of it, many of his much-needed natural resources at the same time. That there was suffering from the extreme cold and other problems of ill health during the gold rush days of the Klondike in 1896 is recorded in many places, but perhaps most vividly in the mines as expressed in the writings of Robert W. Service. Let us hope that an equally good writer will publish today's story before the cold, before the disease and the other pathogens in the air, water, and food pollution take their toll of human lives as they did during the Klondike of 1896. The special climatic conditions of most of Alaska tends to create the illusion that the development of heavy, healthful living conditions in the frozen north is next to impossible. People have been here a long time, you know. The great industrialist Henry J. Kaiser would have said to this statement, "The greater the problem, the greater the challenge, and hence the excitement and all that goes with the development of new ways to solve the harder problems." The extremes in temperatures from a frozen tundra to a melting quagmire are really only the indices of how to go about solving the problems at hand. There are many inhabited areas of the world that are developing measures to solve some of these problems. One must find out how they're doing it by exchanging scientific information with other northern countries. And as Joe pointed out to me last night, you also have to know something about the tropical countries and all the countries in between in order to apply the total knowledge to the north country. It makes little difference whether or not it is concerned with housing, clothing, drinking water, waste disposal, or whatnot. The approach is the same. Apply the best scientific knowledge available in the world and continue to improve on the techniques and add to our store of scientific knowledge as time moves on. The recent successes, and I hate to mention this because everyone does, of the application of available scientific knowledge that resulted in landing our men on the moon should be cause for at least a more favorable outlook here on Earth. The problems of solving housing and health in Alaska seems easy to me compared to landing on the moon. It was suggested that my discussion be and comprehensive planning should be rather elementary. I mentioned that. In a sense, this advice is misleading. From what has already been written and stated by many persons, there appears to be nothing absolutely elementary about the planning that accompanied and took place prior to the discovery and development of the great oil reserves in this state. This is also true with respect to the expanded lumber, mining, fishing, and hunting, and other economic interests of Alaska. The passage of Public Law 89749, which is the basic one on comprehensive health planning, is referred to as a great milestone in a whole series of health legislative programs for the past two or three decades. The very nature of this new legislation and the history of the Comprehensive Planning for Health Services for the Health Services Act and the various amendments thereto disclose a remarkable lack of planning on the part of the lawmakers who passed the law. The Comprehensive Planning Act was a rather limited one in its intent. It only applied to funds granted to states by the Public Health Service. The act was not applicable to that great number of health programs carried out by the federal government itself. I've been with the federal government so long, Dr. Scheibel, I know they never practice what they preach. They appropriate laws for somebody else to do it. I didn't say whether that was right or wrong. That's the way we do it. This apparent lack of foresight on the part of the lawmaker was not either necessarily bad or an oversight. It may have been a more serious mistake, in my judgment, to try the implementation of such a concept on a great, broad, government-wide basis. I think we'd have flopped miserably. The word comprehensive doesn't mean everything. It means different things to different people, but it certainly is not an all-inclusive term. I don't have a very good definition of it. There are several good ones, but the general meaning is now considered to be much, or rather widely inclusive, and that isn't everything. I'm not sure that it ought to include everything that's health-wise. I'm not sure the comprehensive planning ought to include too much of what Dr. Scheibel does as a private practitioner in his day-to-day work with his patients. I think it ought to be concerned with his overall ability to handle patients as a community, but his day-to-day business is not a part of the community planning act we're talking about. Needless to say, there are varying degrees of planning relationships, from simple informing each other to written contracts on how we plan together. For example, the public health engineer, Joe, doesn't need to have the same degree and type of planning with a pediatrician regarding the management of a tuberculosis infant as does a public health nurse. Each needs to know a different aspect of the problem. The engineer needs to know something about the housing and the environment in which that person is living. The nurse needs to know something about the medical nursing aspects of it. But they plan together on a common problem, the child with tuberculosis. One concept that has developed in the connection with the productive comprehensive planning for health services was that including consumers in the planning. A further concept was that planning groups should be representative of the population groups they serve. This at first glance seemed a little bit more than an expansion of the democratic process. We govern ourselves. But to some professionals, I must confess, and I'm going to say docs more than anybody else, Dr. Friedman doesn't object to that, it meant giving over program directions to persons not capable of doing such direction. Since the planning process is supposed to be a continuing process, it has really become quite apparent that the whole idea was a two-way educational process in the delivery of needed preventive and therapeutic health services. It soon became apparent in discussions with representatives of community groups that the health professionals could learn a great deal about the delivery of service with respect to such things as the location of clinics, transportation of people, patients, the costs of services, the urgencies of one type of health services over another, waiting room problem, health hazards in the neighborhoods, schools, churches, grocery stores, highways. Those are what our consumers worry about. An exchange of ideas and decisions on these and similar matters left plenty of work for the health professionals, plus many new exciting ideas that he could think about. Since comp planning for health services is a relatively new concept, a brief review of the types and discussions which being held and published may be of interest to you. And for your information, Joe, I've listed a rather brief reference list in the back of this paper I'll hand over to you, because it'll give you enough to read from now till two Christmases from now. The Western Office, Regional Office of the American Public Health Association, in cooperation with four schools of public health, you know them, the two in California, Loma Linda, the third one in California, and University of Hawaii, has completed its second of a series of seminars on comprehensive planning in the Western states. Two different types of courses have been offered. The first was concerned with the elements of planning and a rather extensive description of Public Law 89-749. The second series, which was planned incidentally by representatives of the Western Branch State Public Health Association, was a more advanced type of course dealing with the elements that go into the planning process, and then to some extent attempted to discuss how one actually goes about planning for health in a comprehensive manner. Dr. Heinrich Blum, whom I think has visited your state, and his associates have developed a rather imposing book called Notes on Comprehensive Health Planning for Health. This publication is a real storehouse of information on planning, contains many valuable references also. The flexibility of Dr. Blum's thinking is emphasized by the fact that the publication is the fourth one undertaken, and to the very fourth revision. And to a very large extent, the changes in each of the volumes represents change in thinking, new laws, attitudes, and amendments to 89-749, getting some of the original mistakes out of the law. They are incorporated in the book, and he's changing it again. A brief look at the list of terms that Blum uses in his glossary will stumble you if you haven't gone over it before. Such terms as trade-offs, systems analysis, models, constraints, cost benefits, program planning, budgeting, and gross national product are but a few of the 9 pages of commonly used terms in the notes that I never heard of when I was in medical school, and I hadn't heard of until just in recent years. The May 1969 issue of the American Journal of Public Health Volume 59, number 5, includes at least 8 papers on the various aspects of planning. A basic one is by Dr. Ellen Pfeiffer, MD, entitled, with a modern term, Hang-ups in Health Planning. Dr. Pfeiffer attempts to point out the many difficulties people experience in trying to implement comprehensive planning for the health in their state. Many specific problems which may be of relevance in your state are discussed, and the needs for extreme patients is emphasized. Dr. Pfeiffer concludes that problems in planning are not permanent obstacles, but they're rather temporary impediments along the way to a hopeful success. They may even be blessings in disguise to slow down the planning process and allow you to strengthen your future planning, strengthen your convictions about your planning process. In any event, it gives planning process a chance by slowing it down. Charles Lewis, MD, presents a paper on the thermodynamics of regional planning. This is in the field, I believe, of the regional medical program type planning, which is a little skewed from purely public health planning. But this appears to be a highly theoretical discussion of the planning process, but Dr. Lewis discusses the difficulties developing around cooperative arrangements across political boundaries that need to be considered in the planning process. I don't know whether you have many political boundary processes in Alaska or not from Fairbanks, but you may at the border. He suggests a pluralistic approach to unified planning as the best way to make these decisions with respect to the social resources of health. Each of the other papers published in this May issue 1969 of the Journal of Public Health is not only emphasizes the fact that planning is here to stay, but it emphasizes that planning's been here all along. We're just re-emphasizing it. We've always done some planning. Dr. Mott's paper, The Myth of Planning Without Politics, is especially interesting, and it should not be a surprise to anyone. Health workers must come to realize that politics is not a treacherous activity. And I mean partisan politics is not a treacherous activity, but an inherent and necessary part of all human endeavor, with where wise men must come to grips with their differences and strive for what they think is right, as well as what they may believe is good for the people as a whole, whether it's politically, by political pressure, or shall we say public health pressure, another form of partisan politics. I would conclude with a rather brief statement. I'll attempt to answer questions, Joe. It would not be possible in conclusion that the problems of delivering health services in the Arctic, it would not be possible to conclude that they're a great deal different than they are elsewhere. The need to plan, assess the problems, take advantage of the extremes in climate and the wonderful human resources available, and include health protection as a full partner in the exploration for oil as one goes along, is a must for all of us. The great oil findings of the North are evidence that man can plan, build, and develop industry in the great North and help create its change. Can anyone dare suggest that health protection cannot do as good a job, one that will be helpful to industry as well as mankind's health? Thank you.
Thank you, Bill. With your permission, panel members and audience, I'd like to proceed in this fashion. We'll let each of the panelists have his say, and then we'll let them question each other, and then we'll question the whole works. Now, in a little bit, we'll stand up, we'll have a little break, but I think we have time, Mac, to hear your words. Mac Lamford.
Thank you. I'd like to talk a little bit about health research in Alaska. There's quite a few of you know that I'm not a research scientist, and the rest of you'd find it out as soon as you asked a couple of questions, I guess. So I'll start by saying I'm an administrative type and an engineer who has a sincere interest in health research in Alaska. And I won't claim that all the things I may mention are original with me. The field of tropical medicine has been established for a long time and the research associated with it. And the field of Arctic method medicine has had a little more difficult time getting started. I suppose it's true that the two aren't exactly parallel, but I think the communicable disease problems associated with the tropical health, they're somewhat comparable to the problems caused by the extreme cold, which we find in the Arctic. And there's probably a wide variety of reasons why Arctic medicine hasn't received the attention and the support of tropical medicine. And I might talk about a couple of things. This first thing I'm going to mention, may appear that I'm differing with Dr. Offrank a little bit, but I don't think too seriously. This is the idea that health problems in Alaska are no different from anywhere else. I think there are differences. A lot of you know more than I do about it. One of the differences is this inability to adapt to cold. Some people develop reactions to cold. One of the things that happens is their hands get cold and numb at relatively warm temperatures. This happens to everybody, of course, at sub-zero temperatures, but when it happens at, say, 40 above, we have a situation where it's pretty intolerable. People can't function very well. They're likely to just have to leave and go somewhere where it's warmer. There's some indication, I've been told, that inability to adapt to the cold may result in some cardiovascular problems. And I'm sure many of you can think of other differences, but bring up another problem which is faces us in getting interest and support for health research. And this is the argument that there are not many people in Alaska, that the money would produce more benefits for more people if it were spent somewhere else. I don't think we can ignore the special health problems that are here, and for the people that have these special problems, of course, it's absolute numbers aren't too important for them. It's 100%. In addition to solving the problems which we have right now, I think we should be putting a good deal of effort into solving problems which would occur in the future if we didn't do something about it now. I believe the oil operations on the North Slope will eventually attract and hold enough people to form small communities at least, and I think we must set the stage from the health viewpoint where the people who move up there can be happy and can produce it something close to their normal capacity at least. And I don't think we should have to depend on some haphazard selection of who can adapt to the cold well or not either. We should have something to alleviate this situation or to at least be able to warn people that it's likely to occur if they aren't careful. These are two problems of, I guess you'd call an administrative type. I don't think there's any single answer to the problem. Something we can do, though, is to spread the word in the professional journals or any other way we're able to just get the word out to those people who do not see these differences. It's an educational process more than anything else. Our people problems aren't restricted to dealing with our counterparts in the States. In Alaska as elsewhere, some of the most pressing research problems, as I see them, have nothing to do with medicine or biology or engineering. They have to do with people. And there's a need to determine what makes people act the way they do and what should we do to change their attitudes. In some of the environmental health problems which we have in the cities in the South 48, the only part unresolved is the people part of it. One example is the rat control programs. The technical aspects of how to control rats in the ghettos has been known for years and years. Remove the food, remove the harborage, poison the existing population. That's about it. Removing the food and the harborage are much more important than the poisoning aspects, and the question of how you motivate people to put their garbage and other trash in cans instead of just throwing it out in the alley just isn't answered. We don't know how to do it. For a lot of us in the health research field, and I'm speaking specifically of the research field, not the health field in general, in the health research field, it's easy to forget these people parts of the problem. Just think of the technical aspects and forget almost forget the people are involved. But unless we keep people in mind, our technical solutions are going to disappoint us, and they may be failures. And we have to face it. Unless our solutions are accepted by the people for whom they were developed, we haven't accomplished anything. We might as well have stayed home. I don't have an estimate on the number of sociologists and anthropologists we need to do this people work, but it's far exceeds our present commitment. Off on a little different subject, I think we have a real opportunity, particularly in the environmental field, to solve problems here in Alaska, particularly on the North Slope, before they occur. Many mistakes have been made elsewhere, and they're glaringly apparent. We're probably not any smarter than the people who settled the rest of the country, but with the benefit of all this hindsight and modern technology, I think we have much less excuse for allowing the development of pollution problems, community sanitation problems, and other environmental problems. In addition to an increase in knowledge in the health field generally, it's now possible to set up mathematical models and games, which will give us an insight, if not a direct answer, into the end product of the interaction of several environmental stresses and their solutions at the same time. And I think something that must receive more emphasis, and that's this concept of considering several things at the same time, stresses and the solutions and how they interact. And along this line at the Arctic Health Research Center, we're embarking on what we call an ecological approach to health research. Now, an ecological approach is a word something like comprehensive planning, and it means a lot of different things to different people. But to us, it means attempting at least to deal with all aspects of health research on a coordinated basis, kind of making it all fit together. And this would, of course, include programs in basic research where there is no immediate use for the end product. Research of such an applied nature that we probably really shouldn't call it research, we should call it something else, and hopefully we have whatever is necessary in between. In addition to research, we're planning to establish what I call a delivery system, but anyhow it is a program which will bridge the gap between the product delivered by the research scientists and the product which is of immediate use to those with direct operating responsibilities in the health field. And I think this delivery feature is essential in health research if we're going to achieve our goals. With the exception of mentioning more work with people, I've almost ignored specific areas of research, and I don't want to ignore them, but I don't want to get too involved in specifics either. I might just mention what we're doing at Arctic Health. And we have programs in entomology, environmental engineering, zoonotic diseases, physiology, epidemiology, injury control, nutrition, and metabolic diseases. And for those of you who are rather intimately familiar with the Arctic Health Program, you may wonder why I have injury control as a program, but we've got a man on orders to come up and set one up for us. These programs are all Alaska oriented, and I think they could all should all receive more resources than are presently available for them. But at any given time, there are usually a few programs which warrant an additional degree of emphasis. And at the present time, I think these are epidemiology, environment-related health problems, and health problems which affect the economic development of the state. I think we have a real need for fact-finding of an epidemiological nature. We must determine the true nature and extent of the health problems which require research. And once we have come up with some type of a solution, we should be able to measure our success in solving them. If we aren't having any success one way, we should try something else. When I mention environment-related health problems, I was thinking of more than strictly environmental sanitation and engineering. In addition to these, I was thinking of such things as the effects of extreme cold, the effects of the different day-night cycle from what most people were brought up with, at least. And these things affect people's ability to be productive and happy, and I don't really think that any serious research is going to be carried out on these things elsewhere. The economic development of Alaska appears to me to be proceeding very well, but the climate does place the state at somewhat of a disadvantage as compared to the other 49. And I think a serious effort should be made to minimize any health problems that would further place it at a disadvantage. Some of these problems are related to the environment, and some have almost nothing to do with the environment. I've rambled around quite a bit, but in summary, I think it's important for us in the health research field to give more attention to the people-oriented aspects of health research to ensure that we develop a product that is of use to those who have to put it in to practice, and that we give special attention to fact-finding, environment-related health problems, and those health problems which affect the economic development of Alaska.
Thank you, Mac. Let's take a 10-minute break. We'll be back in 20 after. And so we'll come to him in a little bit, but he'll be ahead of where he was supposed to be. Dr. Friedman, would you care to talk then?
I certainly would. Be delighted. First, I want to thank Dr. Offrank for coming up and spending a good deal of time in preparing this presentation, which I think is most notable and appropriate. I don't really think it's a simple thing to sit down and think of and prepare what he has. And general as it was, with a few specifics, it gives really a push-off for us to think about some of the types of problems that we're supposed to be and that we want to think about. I think first, for example, about this question of what our goals should be on the North Slope. The simplest thing to do would be to say we know what we do in the rest of the state, we know what we need to do in our all-knowing way about what to do for people and for the environment. So if we have all this skill and knowledge, then all we have to do is go up to the North Slope and apply it in a few more places, a little more difficult places, but we apply it. Frankly, I don't agree with that approach. I mean, I recognize that that's impractical. For example, how can you take, how can one justify taking all of the different disciplines, specialists that we have in the broad field of public health, and let's say there's a small development or a campsite with 10 people, 20 people, 100 people, how do you bring all of these people in to be concerned with, that is to observe, to apply their knowledge, to educate, to give immunizations, to check on all of the supplies and sources of health problems? I don't think that would be the first choice, especially if we thought of three or five or seven different disciplines and said, well, now we've got 50 camps to cover, let's just cover them once a week or once a month with this many persons. So what I'm starting off first with then in our planning, if we can and really do plan, I recognize we must, but I think there's a step between must and actual accomplishment, then how will we establish the specific goals, and who will establish them? Will it be like some of our itinerant nurses in the state who, because of limitations of various types, they get to a village once a year or three times a year? Is this planning? Is this planning at the optimum, or is this simply minimal try to get by planning until trouble crops up? When trouble comes, we send out a whole team of people. Is that the most effective use of personnel and knowledge? So I'm talking then about working together, that is a group of persons, more than one mind, working together, thinking together, and planning in terms of what's the most effective way